When it comes to sports, what do you value? Is it the final score at the end of the game? Is it money, fame, recognition? Or is it more about what you learn through the process? In this Words of Steel podcast, we'll take a deep dive into the world of sports to explore the values, motivations, and societal impact behind the games we love. Together, we'll seek to understand the true essence of sports and the invaluable life lessons that sports can bring. Subscribe now and let's embark on this enlightening adventure together. Good morning, friends. It's good to be with you again. I've had a little bit of a break. We've done some traveling and visited some grandkids, but time to pick up again with the podcasting business. We are waking up in the great country of the United States of America, and as we've alluded to in earlier podcasts, we live in a country where the most important thing in America is sports, and particularly NFL football. Now, as a recap, you know from this podcast that I really greatly enjoy sports, and I believe that sports has a tremendous place and obviously influence in our society. But perhaps we need to continue to evaluate what its rightful place should be and what role it should occupy in our lives. Recently, the National Football League conducted its draft in Detroit. And that's a big TV production. It's something that really people talk about all year. It's one of the many cottage industries that have kind of evolved with all of sports, where we spend a lot of time talking about sports, including on this podcast, analyzing sports. And in particular, with regard to the NFL draft, it's something that goes on all year in terms of analysis and speculation. Even though we've just had the 2024 NFL draft, in which players are selected and they'll go to their respective teams, assuming they can negotiate a contract and all that stuff. And then there are some people who were not selected in the draft who signed free agent contracts. So it's all about managing personnel on these NFL football teams. But in any event, we'll start talking and have started talking about who will be drafted in 2025. But back to the point of my opening, which is to say that sports and the NFL are the most important things in America, it kind of shocked me to learn that in Detroit this weekend, and this was a three-day draft event, the first round selections were one night. There's a lot of hype to that. And then I think the second and third rounds were another night. And then the draft was completed the third day. But in any event, 775,000 people attended the draft in person in Detroit, Michigan. Now, first of all, as my wife likes to say, no, there's actually nothing to see at the NFL draft. There is not a competition. You have a lot of people talking about the draft. You have video footage of people dressed up and their families, maybe from their homes, maybe from the Detroit venue itself, but showing folks anticipating the draft. But there's actually nothing to see. Most of us recognize that sitting on the couch in our living room watching a sporting event on TV is usually a better vantage point than being at the event in person. But in the case of the NFL draft, it's absolutely a better vantage point. But nevertheless, 750,000 people, more than that, went to Detroit over a three-day period of time to gather around this pavilion area that had been constructed to observe each team make its selections in the draft. And you know what? That's all good with me. It's not really my business. I watched some of the draft myself. I was interested in a young man from North Central West Virginia, Zach Frazier, who was selected by the Pittsburgh Steelers. And as I've mentioned on here before, My hometown and home state college team is the West Virginia Mountaineers, and my favorite NFL football team is the Pittsburgh Steelers. So to see that this Fairmont, West Virginia native who played 4 years at West Virginia to then be selected by the Steelers was quite thrilling. But it wasn't so thrilling for me that I was interested in driving to Detroit to watch it from a 2 mile vantage point away from the stage. Nevertheless, Roger Goodell, who is the NFL commissioner, has built a tremendous enterprise. I think he makes $60 to $70 million per year as the NFL commissioner. I've seen statistics that the average NFL franchise is worth over $5 billion. So as we said in our initial podcast ventures, your heart is where your treasure is, and I think that certainly remains true in the case of the NFL, in that there's a bunch of treasure there, and that is where the hearts of a lot of people lie. I'm going to hit the brakes and try to make a perhaps difficult segue into another significant matter that's going on in North Central West Virginia besides the drafting of Zach Frazier. In a matter that has received national news coverage, a local student of a very nearby middle school has garnered headlines as this child competes on the girls' track team here in Harrison County, West Virginia. I believe that this child is now in the eighth grade. This child was born a male. I don't know this child and the family. I do know several people who have children who are schoolmates of this particular child. And in any event, I think there's been litigation that's been going on for 2 years or so now, in which the child has basically asserted that there is a right for this child to compete on the girls' track team, as well as the cross-country team. And there's a lot to this issue with this child. And I'm sure that when I mention that there's a transgender person who wants to compete in sports, then most of you are already going to have opinions and well-held beliefs on this type of discussion. But by way of background, professionally for me, I've mentioned that I've practiced law for a number of years now. It's actually going to be 36 years. And in my realm, when dealing with minor children in the legal system, children under the age of 18 years have always been essentially regarded, and I'm using the term broadly here, but they've been regarded as having, in a sense, a legal disability. In other words, children under the age of 18 years are not able to make binding legal decisions. Having said that, young children get into circumstances that require intervention from time to time of the court system, and I'll use a car accident as an example. I like to do that. That's kind of a specific event that occurs at a specific time. But let's assume a 12 or 14-year-old child was a passenger in a vehicle that was involved in an accident, and maybe the child bumped his or her head, went to the doctor, got checked out. The doctor didn't find anything. There really wasn't any significant injury. Maybe there was an ER visit. Maybe there was a trip to the family doctor. And a year goes by, and the child and his or her parents want to just resolve any claim that the child has. Maybe there's an insurance company who wants to pay the child $1,000 in order to resolve the claim. Well, that under those circumstances doesn't seem particularly significant, but under the law, under the background in which I come from, one would have to go to court and have a judge approve that process in order for it to be enforceable on a child and his family. And as a corollary to that, if a child does have something happen to him or her during that child's tender years, 8, 10, 12, 14 years old, that child is not subject to the normal, what we would call, statute of limitations, which many of you know is simply a time limit on when someone can take action to right a wrong within the legal system. So there's no shot clock, so to speak, on a child's claim until that child reaches the age of 18 years. So I say all that to bring up the point that I'm always fascinated when drastic things are done and significant decisions are made which affect a person under the age of 18 years. And having said that, we can all agree that, hey, that's just parenting or child rearing. Decisions are made every day for children under the age of 18 years by their parents or guardians that don't involve court intervention, including various forms of medical care. A lot of children take medication. Children are going to have surgery. So those things happen, and all of that points out the huge responsibility that we as parents, grandparents, guardians, caregivers, whatever it may be, have in taking care of our children. And when we talk about an issue like transgenderism, which is such a big issue, I'm not suggesting I'm qualified to talk about it. I'm always reminded that we're never just talking about an issue. We're talking about a person, or perhaps many people, who are affected by a particular circumstance. And I hope and do pray for this child that this decision that her parents have made, and now this child has been involved in a couple of years, I guess, of litigation over whether the child can compete on the girls' team and what that will look like moving forward into perhaps high school. And I have my own opinions about this, and I have a lot to say about it. I may not be as well informed as I should be, but the issue that fascinates me, again, comes in the context of sports, because sports, again, are so important that this child and the child's family are pursuing a place for the child on the girls' team. And sports are so important that there's equal or greater opposition to this child's participation on the girls' team. And so that this issue of transgenderism transcends the issue itself, and we get into an issue of fairness of competition and what's just and right for all the students involved, which includes students other than this child. And that's a lot, and that's why I was alluding to earlier. I got started rambling, but I pray that this child will be well, the child's family will be well. Might take us 10, 15 years, 20 years, if I'm still alive, to really assess this particular circumstance. And like all children and parents in all sports and all situations, these things that are magnificently important when somebody's 14, 15 years old or in high school in terms of athletic competition or something else aren't going to be so important 10 to 20 years from now. And that's why it's so vital that the decisions we make now for the child are truly in the child's best interest. And like I said, I don't think it's something we'll know in this case or similar cases for some years to come. I'm very familiar with athletic competition at the high school level in West Virginia, and we in West Virginia and really throughout the country spend a lot of time and effort trying to make things fair. I'm using air quotes there. I think fair sometimes means it's fair if I can win, or it's fair if the decision goes in my favor. If things don't work out that way, then something was unfair. But for instance, the size of the school, we try to have schools competing in classes where the schools are similarly situated size-wise, and in West Virginia now, to some extent, even resource-wise. Wrestling is a great sport, and I'm not super familiar with wrestling, but it's a great sport which emphasizes purported fairness of competition. In other words, a person who weighs 185 pounds is not going to wrestle against somebody who weighs 145 pounds. And yet athletics, through hopefully hard work and integrity, is an arena in which the competitors are trying to gain an advantage over each other within the bounds of fairness. So in other words, if I work harder than you do, if I lift more weights than you do, if I shoot more jump shots than you, if I run more miles than you do, then I may have an advantage when we compete, but we could perhaps agree that that may be a well-earned advantage. Jumping back into the middle schoolers' situation here in north central West Virginia, the court decisions reflect that this child has been taking puberty blockers starting at a young age, and so there's a very narrow decision, although perhaps it will have broad applications, and that's what lawyers like to argue about. But the current and controlling federal court decision, and this is not necessarily the end of the line in the legal process, but the current and controlling decision basically says, as I understand it, that given that this child has had these puberty blockers and has not experienced the effects of what would be maybe normal male puberty, then the court has ruled, in essence has ruled, that it does not see an unfairness in allowing this child to compete on the girls' team in middle school, in track and cross country. Now the lawyers talk about constitutional issues, talk about Title IX, dealing with fairness and equity to women in the educational process for any institution which receives federal funding. So the lawyers talk on some level about the issue involving significant federal laws and rights, which is what should be discussed. However, the real issue boils down to, do the courts think it's fair in this particular person's case to allow this child to compete on the girls' track and cross-country team? And again, where I come from professionally, we like to have bright line rules, rules that everybody can understand and enforce. Gosh, the administrators would like to have rules like that so they know who can play on what team. The parents would like to have rules like that. The students would like to have rules like that. But again, the current and controlling decision in this particular situation right now does not create a bright line rule, which is another problematic situation as far as I see things. And then to kind of magnify the import of these issues, there was a local county meet held recently, the county championships, and we're not talking about a county of 5 million people. Maybe we're talking about a county of 70,000 people and five or so middle schools. But there were a group of young ladies from a particular school who decided not to compete in the shot put event due to the participation of this transgender student in the same event. And now those young ladies are facing some controversy for that decision in some camps. In other camps, they're being congratulated for their boldness and conviction. And I think that's something worth discussing. But as I see the clock ticking on this podcast, I've gone on already a little longer than I typically do, so I may continue this discussion on these issues in another podcast, because there is so much to unpack here and really so much at stake for a number of children and their families in these arenas. So I'm not sure if we've accomplished anything in this podcast. Not sure if we ever have. Just interesting to me that we have these significant issues going on right here in our own backyard. And as someone who's worked in the law and in coaching kids and officiating, I'm fascinated by all these issues. And perhaps as I reflect today, my main takeaway that I need to be convicted of is that when we do discuss these issues, we are talking about children, their parents, family, friends, and these things are very important and life-changing. So we'll end for today. Let's try to be kind to each other. I hope you all have a blessed day. I want to thank Bethany Atkins and Victoria Carmi Evans for their great work. It's been a pleasure to bring you Words of Steel. My name is Tom Steele.